All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is part five of our six-part series breaking down the 2017 Falcons roster, looking ahead to 2018, and today we are touching upon the linebackers and safeties.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, I am your illustrious host, Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the internet, whatever, and also the host of this outstanding podcast that brings you all the greatest content, including four previous parts of our roster review series, where we look back at 2017 by position group, as well as ahead to 2018. Part one on Tuesday was quarterbacks, running backs, and fullbacks. Part two on Wednesday was wide receivers and tight ends. Part three on Thursday, offensive line. And part four on Friday was that defensive line. And today on a special Saturday episode, we will be breaking down linebackers and safeties. And then again on Monday, you will have cornerbacks and the position group that matters the most. Of course, I'm talking special teams. 4 hours of content so far, probably going to be another 2 hours when we put it all together, including today and Monday's episode. So 6 hours of content breaking down the Falcons roster. I'm sure other people have been able to do that in roughly 20 to 30 minutes, but no one will ever say that Aaron Freeman did not put in, you know, the most. He's the hostess with the most, whatever. Who cares? This is why these podcasts last so long, because I BS so much at the beginning of the podcast. So let's jump right into it. Let's talk linebackers first. Regular listeners of this podcast know that throughout the fall and during the regular season, I had various issues with the Falcons linebacker core. I was not overly impressed with them. They're a young, talented group, but from my eyes, a very inconsistent group of players. And certainly, again, considering their youth, that's very understandable. And it probably wasn't fair of me to sort of be as critical as I was throughout the fall of that group. And I can say that now that we're in January and I can take a step back and consider the season in its entirety. You know, one of the issues that we had with this team was they weren't great in terms of coverage against running backs. And that was sort of the hallmark of them. They finished 21st, according to Football Outsiders DVOA metrics and covering running backs. That's not great, considering how athletic they are. We saw several running backs have success against them. But at the same time, we should be fair to them and say, relatively speaking to where this linebacker group was 2 years ago in 2015, and dead last in the league in terms of covering running backs, and just absolutely atrocious in that regard, this team has made significant strides, and I still think there's a lot of untapped potential there in terms of their ability to lock down opposing teams' running backs in the passing game. We saw, you know, some positive things from them against guys like McCaffrey and Kamara towards the end of the season, and I think that gives you some optimism about where these guys will be in the future, because certainly with those two guys in the division, it's going to be, you know, their ability to cover running backs is going to be an important part of their repertoire. And certainly in this 2018 season, when you look ahead to who we're going to be facing, you know, the AFC North, where you got guys like Le'Veon Bell and Gio Bernard and Duke Johnson. You got the NFC East with Chris Thompson, assuming he comes back. You got David Johnson in Arizona. So certainly, you know, the ability to cover these running backs is going to be an important element of this linebacker core success in 2018. But again, you know, their ability to cover guys like Kamara and Gurley on a relative scale and keep those guys in check, I think, leads us to believe that there's a lot of optimism. The other concern I had with the linebackers this year was their ability to make run fits. And unlike the coverage, where you clearly see the skills and the potential there, and so even when they do have those breakdowns, as they did, you still feel relatively comfortable there, given that you feel like there's still a lot of untapped potential. The ability to play the run, given how small our linebackers are, Deion Jones, Devondre Campbell, and Duke Riley, you do sort of wonder if they're ever going to get there. But I can certainly say at least one of those guys did really improve in that regard over the course of the season. That is none other than Deion Jones, who will be heading to the Pro Bowl this year. I also think, you know, Campbell probably had, you know, three out of his four or five best games of the year towards the end of the year, starting around week 12 or so. And thereafter, you know, that first Bucs game, that Rams game was some of his better games as well. So certainly it's very promising to see the Falcons starters finishing the season much stronger than they began it in my eyes. And it certainly makes you a little bit more optimistic again that they can build off that heading into 2018. Now, I'll be honest with you guys. I do think there are going to be times in 2018 and beyond where I'm going to be frustrated with this group from time to time, but I'm going to be a lot more confident that given how they finish this season, that I'll be able to take most of it in stride, understanding, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of this group. Deion Jones is probably always going to be a little bit underwhelming at the point of attack. You can look at guys across the division like a Luke Kuechly, like a Thomas Davis, like a Levante David, and see guys are much stouter at the point of attack against the run and also capable of sort of making those athletic, speed, rangy plays in space and whatnot and in coverage. You often will see Kuechly and Davis and those guys like take on an offensive lineman and win that matchup in the hole and whatnot. So it's hard for me to sort of sit here when I'm evaluating Deion Jones and some of these other players to put Deion Jones on the same level as some of those guys. But, you know, just because there's a little give and take with Deion Jones. But I think where Deion Jones really shined towards the end of the season, really having an outstanding December, was making those, you know, plays in space, showing that range, showing that speed, being able to make plays sideline to sideline. And, you know, you still see that with Thomas Davis. It's really extraordinary to see some of the plays that Thomas Davis makes, given his age and his injury history. But, you know, Deion Jones doesn't have to, you know, the part I'm starting to realize is Deion Jones doesn't have to be Thomas Davis. He just has to be the best version of Deion Jones. And that's a guy that's going to make a ton of plays in space. That's a guy that's going to have an impact in coverage. You know, my biggest issue with Deion was that I wanted him to be a lot more aggressive when he's dealing with those offensive linemen and dealing with that trash on the second level. And, like, again, I don't need to see Deion beating those guys in the same way that I would expect to see a guy like Kuechly do. I just want him to be a little bit more aggressive when it comes to taking on those blocks. And if he has to eat a block and get, you know, pancaked in order to free up one of his teammates, then that's what he's got to do. And I think, you know, as a rookie, and certainly over the first, you know, five or six games of this past season, I think Deion had a tendency to freelance a little bit and was very tentative about dealing with some of those blocks and whatnot. And I think when you play in this particular scheme that's a fairly basic scheme, sometimes you do have to eat those blocks and trust your teammates to do their jobs and fill their gaps and then make the play. And, you know, and throughout last season, and in the early part of this season, I didn't see Deion Jones doing that much, as much. But I saw as the season wore on, he started doing that. And I think that's important because despite Deion's youth, you know, the middle linebacker spot is really sort of the fulcrum and anchor of this defense. And hopefully, you know, when you're playing that spot, you're expected to be a leader. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, my excuse for being hard on Deion Jones, because I just sort of think playing that tentatively at that position, particular position, is sort of unacceptable. But again, you know, he's still young, and I think what I saw over the course of this season was sort of a newfound maturity from Deion Jones because he started to do those things. He started to be much more aggressive when it came to dealing with blocks in the hole. He's still not perfect by any means, but, you know, I don't expect him to be perfect. And I think if he continues to stay on this track, you know, he may not be the perfect middle linebacker compared to some other guys out there, but he's certainly more than good enough to be the guy that can lead this defense to higher levels. So, you know, with that being said, like, I had my issues with Deion early in the season, but I think over the course of the season, obviously he improved. And so what ended up happening was a lot of my anger and frustration with this linebacker core in particular sort of went away from Deion Jones, because he started, to me, doing the things that I want a middle linebacker in a scheme to do. And it started to go towards Devondre Campbell, because Campbell, in my eyes, didn't quite live up to my expectations. So my big beef with Devondre Campbell this year was he didn't show the progress that I wanted to see in terms of his reading and recognition skills. I still think he sort of has those slow eyes, as some people might call him. And I don't really know, unlike Deion, I don't really know if he got better at that as the season wore on, even though he had some of his better games down the stretch. And I think, you know, now sitting back and sort of contemplating this a little bit deeper, I do think a lot of this has to do with my own sort of expectations, because I was certainly one of those people during last season that was sort of advocating that, oh, if Devondre Campbell moves to Sam linebacker, he's going to be good in all, and most, if not all, of the issues that he has as a will linebacker that he played at in 2016 will mostly disappear or be greatly reduced. And while I certainly think he did play much better this season than he did as a rookie, it still, I think, was because my overly high expectations. He didn't quite live up to the standard I had set in my own mind. And particularly with his move to Sam linebacker, one of the more frustrating aspects of his performance this year was he just wasn't consistently setting the edge. And, you know, this partially fueled my, my rallying cry. You know, I guess I was a big proponent of Vic Beasley moving to Sam linebacker. And because I just thought Beasley did a much better job setting the edge. And I think, you know, when I look back at Devondre Campbell, I see a player that's good in coverage. He's not amazing there, you know, but he's good there. I see a guy that's okay versus the run, given some of his ups and downs. He can be good at times and he can be bad at times. But it leaves a lot to be desired. And I think overall it sort of makes him into more of an average NFL starter, maybe slightly above average when you factor in how important it is to have good coverage guys at this level and how relatively rare it is. But I think overall he's closer to an average NFL starting linebacker. But then I step back and I say, well, he's a fourth round pick. Like, what, you know, that only played, what, two, three years of linebacker in college? I should be more than fine with that. And that's sort of one of the things I'm realizing now in January that I didn't necessarily, wasn't as willing to accept in October, November, and December. And, you know, I think what I was I was sort of expecting him to be this Michael Kendricks type of player this year, which probably wasn't realistic. And maybe he'll get closer to that type of player in 2018. But if he's not, again, I think I should be okay with where he is. I don't necessarily know if I'm going to be singing his praises to the same degree that several of the other players on the defense, at least I try to do. But I think I can, you know, I'm not going to lose too much sleep moving forward. If this is all Campbell's going to be, then that's fine. You know, it's going to be interesting with Campbell, because you can make a strong argument that during that like 6 or so week span when he was playing weak side linebacker, when Riley was out and Beasley was getting the majority of those strong side linebacker reps, that Campbell did look a lot more comfortable at that weak side linebacker spot. And I think one of the things I will say positively about Campbell is that even though he wasn't as outstanding a Sam linebacker as I had hoped he would be this year, he still was effective at times, and he was still effective at times as a will linebacker. And that versatility to basically switch between either outside linebacker spot with little to no drop-off, I think is certainly a valuable asset to have. And I only just wish that the Falcons would be able to be, you know, that they would utilize that versatility when it comes to certain matchups. You know, there's certain games where, you know, you could imagine where the Falcons are facing a team with a really good tight end. I'm trying to think of, you know, who's a team that we're going to play next year, like Washington. like next year when we play Washington, and assuming Jordan Reed is there, like in those games, you're going to want Campbell at Sam linebacker because of his ability to cover a tight end in those situations. But then there's another game where you're not necessarily too concerned about the other team's tight end, and you feel pretty comfortable with the team's ability to sort of go to man up the other team's receivers in those regards. And then in those situations, you might want to put Beasley at Sam linebacker and be like, okay, let's dial up some blitzes and be a little bit more aggressive. And I think having Campbell's ability to flip between those two positions and then having guys like Beasley and Riley that you can sort of mix and match with at the other spot based off of the matchup is an incredible asset to have for this Falcons defense. But of course, you know, the Falcons have already basically said that Beasley's not going to play Sam linebacker in 2018. And so that probably leaves Campbell as the sole guy there. And so, you know, I've been a Falcon fan for many, many years. I've learned to live with this sort of the disappointment that they don't ever do the things that I want them to do. But, you know, that is neither here nor there. Now, I have a little bit more I want to say about this linebacker group, including our rookie Duke Riley. But I want to remind you guys that if you did not check out the mini Locked On Podcast Network hosts and shows that were down at the Senior Bowl this week in Alabama, giving you daily practice reports, then by all means, you got to check those out, especially Locked On NFL Draft with host John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema. Had some guests on to talk quite a bit about the Senior Bowl this week. So you guys definitely want to check out those episodes on the Locked On Podcast Network. So let's talk about Duke Riley. And, you know, I think the interesting things about Duke Riley is I'm looking forward to see what Riley shows in 2018. As I've said several times on these last couple of episodes, I do think it's really important to monitor how much improvement a player has from year one to year two. Oftentimes a player can be relatively unimpressive in their first year in the league or with this team and then sort of show that growth in year two and suddenly you're looking at a guy that's, you know, not necessarily say that he's going to be a future star, but certainly a guy that's going to be able to have a successful career for multiple years as opposed to a guy that may wind up, washing out sooner rather than later. And so I think Riley's going to be one of those players in that regard. I don't think Riley was bad in 2017, contrary to popular opinion. I think you could argue that he was about as effective a rookie starter as Devondre Campbell was overall. When Campbell was a rookie, in 2016, I think the main difference is Campbell had a number of sort of splash plays with an interception, you know, a forced fumble here or there, a couple of pass breakups and whatnot, and maybe a big hit or two. And sort of that, I think, offsets many of the sort of breakdowns, the frequent breakdowns and mental errors that he made throughout his rookie campaign. And so that sort of balanced the scales out in a lot of people's eyes. And unfortunately for Duke Riley, you just don't see those sort of splash plays. You don't see the pass breakups. You don't see the big hits that sort of offset things in a lot of people's eyes when they focus on the big plays and the splash plays. Riley had an interesting rookie season. You know, he wound up playing about half of the defensive snaps over the first five or so games before he got hurt against the Patriots. And then over the last month of the season was basically playing about 10 to 15% of the snaps and was primarily relegated to playing special teams. I do wonder if the Falcons will be open to bringing in some competition for Riley. I don't think they necessarily need to. I think given how much of a vested interest they have in seeing Duke Riley develop, bringing in somebody that will sort of stall that development is not really necessary, especially when you're looking at a player like Riley. And also if you can successfully bring back Kamal Ishmael, you should be pretty good at the linebacker position. And of course you always have an emergency option in case you want to move Vic Beasley back there as well. So I don't feel like the Falcons need to feel compelled that they need to really push Riley, but we'll see what happens. You know, the expectation for 2018 is that Jones and Campbell will get almost all the reps in the nickel And only in the base defense, Riley will play that weak side linebacker spot. And, you know, maybe we'll get pushed by Ishmael, assuming he comes back. And that'll roughly work out to be about a third, you know, 40% of the snaps or so for Duke Riley next year. And if he earns more than that, that'll likely be an indicator that the team is happy with his progress. You know, I think you can certainly say that his tackling was no doubt poor as a rookie. But I do think, you know, given how much Dan Quinn stresses that they can teach tackling, I don't think that should be a major, major concern if you're a believer in sort of Dan Quinn's ability to teach that. Now, you can certainly be skeptical of it because tackling has not necessarily been always this consistent thing that the Falcons have done well defensively over the last couple of years under Dan Quinn. But if you do buy in sort of Dan Quinn stock, and I'm not suggesting that you should or shouldn't, I'm just saying, you know, it's up to your own personal decision and viewpoint on that. But if you do buy in that Dan Quinn and company can teach a guy how to tackle better, then I don't think that should be a major concern. And for that, and that's part of the reason why I'm not as down on Riley as others are. Because I do think in a lot of the areas that I already talked about where Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell aren't at their best, I think you can make a strong case that Duke Riley is better than those guys, or at least show flashes in those areas that makes you a little bit more cautiously optimistic about his potential. You know, I thought his reading and recognition skills were much better than Campbell's were, you know, certainly compared to last year and arguably compared to this year in terms of being able to quickly diagnose plays. And it also seemed that, you know, when he was regularly being featured on the defense in the early part of the season, he was a lot more aggressive in some of those games. I'm thinking about the Bills game and the Dolphins game in particular, because those were two of the games where Deion Jones really underwhelmed me with his sort of aggressiveness and tentativeness trying to deal with blocks. And Riley was better in that regard than he was. And so, you know, at least from my perspective, I do think, you know, because he does some of those detail things that you want from the position, that the other guys haven't consistently done in the early part of their career, if Riley can sort of translate that into making more plays and cleaning up some of those missed tackles and some of those other errors that he makes, then I think you can make a case, you can make an argument that he has much greater potential to shine than either of those other two guys that are currently ahead of them. Now, you know, who knows if that actually comes to fruition. But, you know, there's a possibility, there's a reality where 2 years from now, where Duke Riley is basically a backup on this team playing special teams. There's also a reality 2 years from now where Duke Riley could be considered, you know, the best linebacker on this team. You know, only time will tell. I guess just for me, you know, looking back at the season and seeing people give out their, you know, their grades for the Falcons rookie class, I saw it during the middle of the season. I also saw it at the end of the season, and seeing people, you know, giving out these D+ or whatever grades on Duke Riley. I don't get that. Like, he played 5 games and got hurt, you know, and he's a 3rd-round pick that didn't light the world on fire in his first 5 starts in the NFL. And that deserves a D in your eyes. Like, I don't get that. Like, you know, if you gave him a C- because you were factoring in the fact that he got hurt and you factored in the fact that he essentially got benched at the end of the season, like, I could understand that, but anything below that to me is just kind of too harsh for a rookie guy. We'll wrap up this linebacker discussion by talking about some of the depth. This is where I think the Falcons' needs are at this position, shoring up their depth. You got guys like Kamal Ishmael, Sean Witherspoon, Leroy Reynolds, and Jordan Tripp that are impending free agents this offseason. Of that quintet, I think, you know, re-signing Ishmael is probably the priority in that group. I think when you look at the Falcons free agents this offseason, there aren't too many guys that I would make it a priority to keep re-signed before free agency hits. But I think Ishmael is one of those guys that I would try to make a bid for. And we'll see if he gets offers and nibbles on the open market if other teams are sort of interested. The Falcons have been sort of forced to pay him a little bit more over the last couple of years to entice him to remain in Atlanta. And it may be, you know, time that Ishmael decides to branch out, knowing that, you know, if Duke Riley continues to develop, his potential as a starter is sort of limited here in Atlanta. But, you know, I've never been a huge, huge fan of Kamal Ishmael, at least when he's been forced as a starter. But I do think he's an excellent backup. I think as a starter, he has some of the same limitations from an instinctual standpoint that Devondre Campbell has, but lacks the sort of physical tools that Campbell certainly possesses that, you know, makes up for it in a lot of ways. But I do think Kamal Ishmael has always been an extremely reliable backup for the Falcons and a spot starter for the Falcons. It's only when we have to, when he's getting extended reps, do I see the limitations show up. But I think Ishmael, the one thing I could certainly say positive about Kamal Ishmael is that he goes to show that, you know, seventh round picks are not throwaways. He's, you know, he might wind up having a much longer career in Atlanta than a guy like Robert Alford, who was in that same draft class, and several other guys, certainly a bunch of guys that were in that class and in the following draft class in 2014. So, you know, he's a solid player, and I like having him on the team. I just don't necessarily, you know, put as much credence as other people do in his ability to be a viable starter. Leroy Reynolds, I probably would bet would be re-signed by the Falcons, even though I don't have great affinity for him. You know, if you listen to the running back episode part one of this roster review series this past Tuesday, I mentioned when discussing Derek Coleman and sort of his special teams prowess that it was, in fact, Reynolds and Riley that over the last, what was it, nine games or eight games or whatever, that actually led the team in special teams tackles. And I don't think that necessarily indicates that either Reynolds or Riley were great on special teams this year, but they, you know, they got some, made some plays. I think Reynolds, the team likes Reynolds because he has experience playing all three linebacker spots and can provide some depth there. Also, you know, he brings energy on special teams. I don't know if he brings great skill on special teams. So I think that's another reason why they like him. He's one of those players that I think the team could relatively easily upgrade over and get somebody who has a little bit more upside to play defense. Jermaine Grace. Sorry. But at the same time, if the Falcons do re-sign him, there's not a whole lot I can say to complain about it. As for, you know, I don't have much to say about Jordan Tripp. You know, he's a special teams guy, dealt with some concussions. Who knows if his playing career continues after this point, but I doubt he'll be a player that the Falcons are particularly invested in re-signing this offseason, but we'll see. And we'll wrap up the linebacker discussion by talking about my beloved Sean Weatherspoon. I can say with a good amount of confidence that he probably won't be back. I don't quite know why we signed him in the first place. I remember when we signed him and he got his old number 56 back and from Jermaine Grace. And I was like, why are we taking away Jermaine Grace's number? Because we're going to be cutting Sean Weatherspoon in a month when Duke Riley comes back from injury. Of course, that did not happen. The Falcons wound up cutting Jermaine Grace, presumably because they thought he could clear waivers and they could sneak him on the practice squad. He did not clear waivers. He got claimed by the Colts. And meanwhile, Sean Weatherspoon played six snaps on defense for the Falcons as a reserve middle linebacker in two games and then was inactive for the rest of the season. As they say, in the words of the great Jalen Rose, keep getting them checks, Spoon. You know, I'll always love and appreciate what Spoon did for the Falcons from 2010 to 2014, and then always loved his return in 2016. He had a nice, you know, 6-7 year run here in Atlanta, but you know, I don't necessarily know why they decided to make it 8 for him. You know, Grace was one of those guys that I feel like had they, you know, kept, then maybe he would have been the guy that could have competed with Duke Riley. He could have been the guy that was the upgrade over Leroy Reynolds. And they lost that a valuable asset basically to maximize six snaps. So kudos to you, Falcons. Even when I try my best to praise the Falcons, I have to slap them down and tell them how dumb they're being at a certain time. So they certainly do not bat 1,000. All right, let's talk let's talk safeties. I'm sorry. The reason I decided to put these two positions together largely is because I don't know what has to be said about the safety group. You know, we're pretty good there. Keanu Neal's the GOAT. Ricardo Allen's great. Devontae Casey showed some things as a rookie. Sherrod Neeson is a perfectly capable backup. You know, I might as well just be done and we'll get to part six. No, but I got more to say. But, you know, I really liked what Keanu Neal did in his second year. He was the one player I was very excited about coming on the heels of that 2016 season, because I thought he did a lot of the sort of details of the position that when you're evaluating these guys and you're watching them on the film, you're sort of focused on. And it goes back to sort of what I was talking about with the splash play thing. And again, this is not a knock on Deion Jones, but I felt like people over-exaggerated sort of Deion Jones's performance as a rookie, you know, and sort of touting him as the defensive rookie of the year for the Falcons. In fact, I thought Keanu Neal was a much better player, but that was largely because Deion Jones had those big splash plays, you know, pick sixes and whatnot. While, you know, I think on a snap-to-snap basis, Keanu Neal was certainly bringing it, and only people really noticed him when he would force a fumble or deliver one of those jaw-rattling hits or something, which certainly happened frequently. So it's not like he didn't get a lot of love as a rookie, just not as much as I think he deserved for some of the finer details of playing defensive football. And I think, you know, with Keanu Neal really solidifying himself in that sort of Cam Chancellor type of role and capacity on this team and having a comparable impact, he's great against the run. I always joke that he's our best linebacker, and it may seem like an exaggeration, but it's not. Like, I mean, he, as a safety, he finished the season with 14 run stops, according to my own breakdowns. That's too shy of where Devondre Campbell was at 16. And we also saw Keanu Neal show great progression in his coverage. He was ability to go toe-to-toe with some of the better tight ends in this league, I think was a huge factor in the defense's ability to make significant strides. Certainly, I know people will remember a few too many breakdowns against the Eagles and maybe one or two big plays to Charles Clay in that Bills game, even though that really wasn't his fault on that particular play. But I don't think that should, you know, those two blemishes or whatever should overshadow, you know, all the good work that he did throughout the season. You know, particularly that Patriots game, I thought he really impressed me. I said throughout the season, you know, Keanu is my man, has consistently my man crush Monday. I think he was the team's most consistently good player on defense week to week. And, you know, he's the guy that I trust the most on this defense to show up each and every Sunday and bring it in a lot of ways. So not a whole lot else to say. You know, I could probably spend another 20 minutes just gushing over Keanu Neal, let's talk about Ricardo Allen, another solid year for him. It's nice to be finishing a season without hearing a peep about, you know, we need to upgrade Ricardo Allen like what people were clamoring for throughout the 2016 season. I think people start to, you know, fans in general are now sort of appreciating his value in terms of what he brings to the table, the leadership, the communication skills, all those sorts of things are a big part of why the defense is, and particularly the secondary, is so successful and really the best part of not only this Falcons defense, but arguably, you know, this Falcons team. You know, it'll be interesting with Ricardo Allen in regards to whether or not the Falcons are going to try to work out an extension this offseason. You know, the way that they gushed about him at the year-end press conference makes that a very distinct possibility. I know that's been something that people have been speculating over the last couple of months. I've said it before, but I don't necessarily know if it was me making the decision, whether I would make extending Allen a priority this offseason. I think I would probably wait and see what happens in 2018 before, you know, paying out any type of money. I think a lot of that has to do with Devontae Casey and seeing where his future lies. And again, seeing where, how much growth he shows from year one to year two. But at the same time, if the Falcons did wind up extending Allen, it would make total sense in my eyes. I think at the very least you should probably, you know, get into when you because he's going to be a restricted free agent, so there's not going to be major issues keeping him, assuming the Falcons give him that first or second round tender. Probably I would imagine they'll give him a first round tender, since they're probably very serious about keeping him. But I think you can certainly broach the topic of extension talk this offseason just to sort of see where his market is at. I would imagine, you know, Allen's market is probably somewhere between $5 and $8 million a year when you look at the increasing price tags of safeties in recent years. You know, I think if you could get him to accept a contract worth $5 million a year, I think that more than makes it worthwhile to do the extension, because it's only likely to go up from there. But if it's higher than that, then I do think you might want to be open to the possibility of seeing what happens in 2018. And then with the possibility that when Allen is an unrestricted free agent following this season, there's a chance that if Kazee makes the proper leaps that you want to see from him, you'd be willing to turn the keys over to him. But, you know, it will take a big leap for Kazee to get to that level quite yet, where you're willing to let Ricardo Allen walk. You know, he's still got a lot of things that he needs to learn in trying to make a successful transition from a cornerback comfortable playing near the line of scrimmage to a single high safety. You know, the instincts quite aren't there. You know, he's much more comfortable playing close to that line of scrimmage. And, you know, he tends to be a little, you know, a step or two slow with his diagnosing. And it left the Falcons secondary those times when Rico was playing or was out of the lineup or being forced to play nickel cornerback, and then they had Kazee on the back half. It created some opportunities for the Falcons to give up some big plays just because Kazee wasn't quite as good at being in position to prevent some of those vertical throws as Allen is. And, you know, I think fortunately the rest of the Falcons secondary was, you know, more than good enough to sort of prevent that from occurring. So it never really sort of showed up on film or, you know, on the television screens. But, you know, I look at Kazee, you know, he's got the speed, he's got the burst, he's got the range, the physicality that you want to see at that position. And if things do start to slow down for him, you can make a case that he has the potential to be a better option than Ricardo Allen. It seems like we're always talking about, you know, who could be better than Ricardo Allen. Is this guy potentially better than Ricardo Allen, whether it's Brian Poole, whether it's DeMonte Kazee, whether it's, you know, Eric Berry, which was the guy that everybody was clamoring for a year ago. It doesn't necessarily always seem – it always seems like people are in the market for replacing Ricardo Allen. I think – I guess my larger point is Allen is good. There's certainly – you can make a case that there's room for the Falcons to improve that position, but it's going to be tough for anybody to come in here and do that. I'll be curious if Kazee is that guy, but we'll see. You know, if Kazee doesn't make that leap, then I don't think the Falcons should have major issues re-signing Allen next offseason. But again, I certainly understand if the Falcons want to show their love for what Rico has done so far and reward him with the contract extension sooner rather than later. You know, wrapping up the safety group, Sherrod Neesman, I think, has been a pretty solid backup. And when I talk about guys making that year one, the year two leap, I remember the first preseason we had Sherrod Neesman, given all the hype that people had about him when he was coming out of UCF, I think it was. I can't remember. One of those Florida schools, Florida Atlantic, whatever, FAU. And, you know, people were like, oh, this guy's great. And then watching him in that first preseason, I was like, hey, he's okay. Like, he didn't do anything that, you know, really impressed me. And then watching him in the second summer, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, he's good. He can play in this league and be a solid backup. But I think, you know, when he's gotten opportunities, he's been solid at times. Again, he's another young guy that doesn't have the world's greatest instincts. You know, he's athletic, and I feel like he was an underutilized person on special teams this year. I think he could have certainly, had he gotten more reps there, could have certainly enhanced that unit. I think you could make the case for the Falcons that they would be smart to bring in some competition to push him. I think, you know, given how fortunate the Falcons have been so far the last 2 years with Keanu Neal's health and knowing the shorter shelf life of safeties in this league, given the high impact and the wear and tear that those players endure, you know, everybody talks about the short shelf life of running backs, and certainly they do have the shortest shelf life, but safeties probably are the second shortest shelf life, and they're basically the running backs of the defense in terms of the wear and tear that they take. Typically, it's very tough for guys to make it to age 29 or 30 without, you know, significant toll being taken on the body. And again, that's, you know, Keanu Neal's still young, but it's certainly a testament to his, you know, ability. When you go back over the last 2 years, when outside of those first two games in 2016 that he missed because he got injured in the preseason, he's only missed a combined 68 snaps in the Falcons' 35 games since then. And a decent amount of those snaps were, you know, him getting pulled out of the game because it was garbage time and the Falcons had a big lead. So, you know, the fact of the matter is he's missed on average like less than one snap or less than two snaps a game. You know, that's a testament to Keanu Neal's durability. You know, I don't necessarily know how much you need to invest if you want to try to upgrade over Sherrod Neesman. You know, maybe a throw, not a throwaway. Again, I just said Kamal Ishmael, there's no throwaway picks in the seventh round. But if a good player slides to the seventh round, maybe you pull the trigger on that guy. Maybe if you're, you know, in that first week of April when sort of free agency is dying down and you look around and you see a veteran out there that's, you know, could be had for relatively cheap, then you might pull the trigger on that guy just to bolster that position. But I do think Neesman has shown enough that you can be reasonably confident. Plus, with the present, if you can successfully re-sign Kamal Ishmael, you can be relatively confident that you have enough pieces there at that position to get by. And, you know, again, having Campbell's ability to cover tight ends, Casey as well. So I do think the Falcons are in a good position as far as their safety depth goes and certainly can continue to develop all four of these guys over the next couple of years because they're all still pretty young. That's it. It seems like we finally got an episode under 45 minutes. You know, we'll see if I could – how long – I guess I could drag this out for another couple of minutes to push that – 45-minute boundary. But if you guys have any questions, comments, suggestions for topics, thoughts on anything I've said in recent weeks, all that type of stuff, you can send those over to me on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. If it's podcast-related, just let me know in the tweet. Otherwise, you can just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you tweet at Locked On Falcons, I will automatically know it's podcast related. If you don't like Twitter character limits, you can check us out on Facebook, Locked On Falcons, email lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment on falcfans.com or lockedonfalcons.com where the show is hosted and posted daily. So Monday, I was about to say tomorrow, tomorrow we're going to have a Pro Bowl recap. No, rapid reaction to the Pro Bowl. No, we're not. Two guys we talked about today are playing in the Pro Bowl, Deion Jones and Keanu Neal. Monday we will talk about cornerbacks and special teams. So that will be the wrap-up of our roster review series. These super long episodes are killing me, but I don't apologize for good content. I think you guys certainly have gotten a lot of great content from myself, if I could say so, if I could toot my own horn for a second this week, and certainly will be the most informed of Falcon fans when it comes to the Falcons roster. And we, after we finish up the series, we'll do some awards, year-end awards at the end of next week. We'll talk Super Bowl next week as well. And then once the Super Bowl is over, I'll probably post a rapid reaction to the Super Bowl on that following Monday. But then we can start to pivot towards the combine and the draft and free agency. And hopefully by then I will have watched a lot more film and we can really jump headlong into the offseason that we've only sort of been dancing around these last couple of episodes. So look forward to that, guys. As always, enjoy yourselves. You know, the beautiful thing about the off season, it's a lot less stress than it is during the regular season. So, you know, take a break from football, listen to this podcast, but, take a break from football if you need it. Podcast is going to be still here waiting, chilling, and we got a long way to go. So looking forward to it.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.